Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now back to Double Overtime on 95.7 The Game.
49ers 31, Jets 13. That's great, right? Whitey and JD on double overtime. Should have been, was supposed to be. The 49ers did so many of the things they planned to do today. But the injuries started piling up, and now the 49ers are left to wonder where this path leads them. Are they going to get anywhere near a Super Bowl? And they await MRI results for players like Nick Bosa, although it does not look good. Again, JD, just to go over the injuries, please jump in if I miss one or misstate one. You got Garoppolo high ankle sprain, so a number of weeks. Mostert MCL sprain, so that's a week-to-week deal. Solomon Thomas potential ACL, but we don't know yet, won't know till tomorrow. And Bosa likely ACL injury. Very, very, very good chance that he's done for the year.
Yeah, no, that's it. And at this point, it's kind of wait and see on Solomon Thomas. And then, yeah, Garoppolo, I mean, they didn't rule him out for next week even, although Kyle Shanahan did say that they really wouldn't know until the end of the week if he was going to have, you know, any kind of a shot to play it. Basically, how much do things swell up as they travel from New York to West Virginia? And you know, does it look better or worse maybe over the next 48 hours? If it looks the same or worse, obviously that wouldn't be a good sign. The Niners will practice again on Wednesday, and I think that's when we'll get our first real signal as far as Garoppolo goes when Kyle Shanahan will announce before practice who's going to be in and who's going to be out.
Yeah, we're going to look at some options the 49ers have going forward here, given the injuries they're dealing with. Also, we're going to look at the NFL scoreboard, which is always fun. But just NFL Sunday, just love going over the scores. Before we do that, I was just mentioning, hey, I'm a man of reason, and people are talking about Super Bowl hangovers, and it's getting harder and harder to say, oh, there's nothing to that. I don't know if you saw this, but NBCSportsBayArea.com writes about it, and they mention this on the Fox broadcast. The 49ers team plane had a mechanical issue. So, let's see, they had to take off from San Francisco instead of San Jose, and they didn't land in New Jersey until 2 a.m. local time. So some people now are saying, oh, that was an omen. The 49ers should have known. So these things starting to pile up right now, JD.
Now I don't think that that's a Super Bowl hangover, though. What would that be?
No,
like
it's a bad omen potentially. I mean, if you buy into those things, like, oh, it's a bad omen. They should have known.
There isn't anything for me though that has. I don't know, and maybe you disagree with me on this. I'd love to get your take on it. It just I don't feel like there's been anything the first 2 weeks that I would put in the category of. Well, it's a Super Bowl hangover. I mean, you know, maybe they're bad luck with injuries, but that's not a Super Bowl hangover. Like, that has nothing to do with whether you made it to the Super Bowl or not. Now, play, uninspired play, you know, that to me is a Super Bowl hangover. You know, not being sharp, that's a Super Bowl hangover. You know, stringing together maybe four or five games that look like the Arizona game and being 2-3 while fully healthy would be a Super Bowl hangover, but I don't think anything we've seen to this point at all has been something that you could put in the category of a Super Bowl hangover. I think we need to properly define that if we're starting to, and I'm not saying you, but if we're starting to say, oh, Super Bowl hangover. No, this is not a Super Bowl hangover. This is bad injury luck.
I agree with you 100%. I look at it the same way you do. To me, a Super Bowl hangover is when a team comes out and they're so distracted by the offseason they had or expectations or whatever it is, they just don't play well. And when you have guys, so many guys get injured like this, that's poor luck. But it's an umbrella term. Super Bowl hangover can be a lot of things. I agree with you. Unfortunate luck is not a Super Bowl hangover. That said, what do we got here as we take a glance, JD, at the Sunday week two NFL scoreboard, sir?
Well, I wanted to start with the Rams and the Eagles because the 49ers are going to be playing the Eagles in a couple of weeks, and the Rams are a team that they're going to be playing even a few weeks after that. But the Rams continue to impress. They win at Philadelphia. They build a nice lead early. They end up winning 37-19 over the Eagles. So the Eagles fall to 0-2. Well, the Rams improve. You know, they've now won two games. Everybody playing the NFC East. And the Rams, in the first 2 weeks of the season, Whitey, have beaten the two favorites in the NFC East. They beat the Dallas Cowboys, and they beat the Philadelphia Eagles. Carson Wentz, a couple of interceptions today, 26 of 43 for 242 yards. And Jared Goff continues to be impressive. Jared Goff, 20 of 27, 267, three touchdowns. I know a lot of folks believed that the Rams were going to, you know, take a step back. Maybe they're not a playoff team at all. They had 30 first downs today. Jared Goff was a factor. Cooper Kupp back in the mix. Higbee with three touchdowns today for the Rams. And like I said, they built a 21-3 lead and then cruised, really, in this one. It did get to 24-19 in the fourth quarter. But they go on and they answer back and win 37-19. The Rams are one of the early season, impressive teams these first 2 weeks because they've beaten two teams that a lot of people had as playoff teams.
Yeah, the good news there, as you said, wow, the 49ers have the Eagles coming up here week four, and the Eagles off to a terrible start. The bad news, the Rams in the division look tremendous. So, okay, the 49ers didn't get any divisional help from the Eagles today, but I know we talked about it yesterday. Hey, maybe they would get some help in the division from that Washington football team. This was a classic trap game scenario. You had the Arizona Cardinals opening the season against the defending NFC champions on the road, a big win for them. You knew that they were going to take Arizona maybe a little lightly. Sure, it was Arizona's home opener, but that doesn't matter. There's no fans there. So classic trap game scenario. So how much help did Washington give the 49ers today?
Yeah, nothing. Not much. It was all Arizona in Arizona's home opener. They beat the Washington football team 30-15. Ooh. They jumped out to a 20-0 halftime lead. Kyler Murray, 26 of 38 for 286 yards, a touchdown and an interception. He also ran for 67 yards. DeAndre Hopkins only targeted 9 times in this game, but he did have 8 catches for 68 and a touchdown.
Wow.
The impressive win that the Washington football team had over Philadelphia, they fell back to, I think, what we thought they would be today. And the Cardinals, a team, now when we look at this NFC West, another team that's 2-0 with the 49ers now 1-1, and the Cardinals have the ability to get on a little bit of a run here. Similar to how the 49ers did a year ago, their next three games, we're talking about the Niners' next three games, the Cardinals' next three games, Detroit, 0-2, the Carolina Panthers, 0-2, the New York Jets, 0-2. So they actually, over the next three games, will also be playing three teams that don't have a win. Impressive performance for the Arizona Cardinals. As they look, I didn't think they were going to beat the Niners week one, but once they did, they've now put themselves in a position where they can be one of the surprise teams. We might be talking about them at 5-0 here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, the Cardinals, they were pitching a shutout at halftime. You mentioned the Cardinals have the Jets coming up. We saw how bad the Jets were today. Do the Jets, they're going to win a couple games this year, aren't they? I think they have some talent, and obviously they were shorthanded today. But I mean, as terrible as they looked today, I had me thinking, wow, is this going to be 0-16? I don't think they're that bad, are they, John Dickinson, these Jets?
The Jets? Oh, I think they are. I think the Jets are
wow.
that bad.
Really?
Yeah, I think – no, I think they're – I mean, I don't think they're going to win five games. I mean, I, okay. you know, I if you said, J.D., I'm going to set the Jets over-under at five, I'm going to take the under because at this point that would mean they'd have to go 5-9. How is yeah. a team that's looked as bad as they have going to go 5-9? I don't think they can. I think – I mean, yeah, 4-8 feels like that would be a stretch. Or you know, 4-10 feels like that would be a stretch over the next 14 games. But yeah, 5-9. I don't think they can get that done. But the Cardinals now 2-0. The Dallas Cowboys found a way. The Cowboys,
I turned that game off, JD. Let me stop you there. They were way behind. That game was over. I turned it off. Atlanta won that game, and they were way ahead. Right?
It was 20-0 at the end of the first
yeah.
quarter. The Falcons were up 20-0 at the end of the first quarter. Matt Ryan threw four touchdown passes. Dallas came back from 20-0 down. The Cowboys cut it late in the third quarter to 29-24. So it was a five-point game going to the fourth quarter, and then the Falcons would answer back. The Falcons would put 10 on the board. Early in the fourth quarter. So midway through the fourth quarter, it's 39-24, a 15-point lead.
Ball game over.
Ball game was not over as Dak Prescott led the Cowboys to a touchdown, made it 39-30, and then there was a gaffe from Mike McCarthy, down 31-30. Down 39-30, so a 9-point deficit. McCarthy didn't kick the extra point. McCarthy went for two, and they didn't convert. So you're thinking you're down. You're down nine. Think of this, Whitey. You're down nine with 4:57 to go, and you just scored. You're gonna need a stop, and you hope you can get a stop, get the ball back, try to you know kick the extra point. You're down eight. Get a stop. Get the ball back. It's a one-score game. You score a touchdown, you go for two at that point to try and tie the game. Mike McCarthy goes for two, down nine, and they fail to get it.
Which is worse, in your opinion? Is it worse, that decision? And obviously they won, but is that decision worse, or Fangio last week on Monday night against Tennessee just deciding not to call
this.
The timeouts?
And really? It's this. And Mike McCarthy is 0 for 2 in terms of – remember last week against the Rams, they were in field goal range in the fourth quarter, try and tie the game. They wind up going for a fourth down. They don't convert when the field goal would have tied the game, and they wound up losing the football game last week. So a bad decision there. The Cowboys did get the football back, down 39-30, and they scored. With 1:49 to go, and so it's 39-37 at that point. McCarthy did not go for two. And then the Cowboys, onside kick, and the Falcons didn't know the rule. Like, the Falcons didn't know the rule or whatever. Like, they let the ball cross 10 yards. It was like they thought they couldn't touch it until it went 10 yards.
I can't believe that. That happened? Yeah. That happened. I was playing in Pop Warner, and we were on the Vikings, and the Rams were the other team, and we had an onside kick, and the Rams didn't. They let it go, and we ended up with the ball on the 5-yard line. And I mean, yeah, I remember we were laughing at, I can't believe they didn't know the rules. An NFL team didn't know the rules on an onside kick? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So it looked like they didn't know they could touch it until it went 10 yards. The ball goes 10 yards. The Cowboys end up getting it, and then the Cowboys. Dak Prescott, an impressive game. He wound up 34-47 for 450 yards.
Wow.
And a touchdown. He led Greg Zuerlein, led the Cowboys down for a 46-yard Greg Zuerlein attempt at the buzzer, and he made that. So the Cowboys won from 20-0 down and from 39-24 down with 7 minutes to go. The Cowboys win 40-39 over the Atlanta Falcons. So just a wild, wild game there. That was the game of the morning in
Question
the National
for you.
Football League. Yeah.
Two questions. One is I'll just have to look this up myself. I can't wait to read Mike McCarthy's explanation for going for it, going for two when he was down nine.
Well, it's into the analytics. Remember, it's the analytics, right?
I think he must have been looking at the wrong, had the wrong chapter or something. But don't you think now in the NFL especially, and there's no excuse for blowing a lead like that, I know, but it's more like basketball than it used to be in that, and it's so pass heavy now and so offensive minded, and it's so much more difficult for the defense that is a lot easier to come from behind in the NFL than it used to be. Again, that's a remarkable comeback, but I think that type of thing is more common than it certainly was even 10 years ago or 15 years ago, in my opinion.
Yeah, it always feels like teams that are down two scores have a much better chance. You get one score, and then all of a sudden, all right, one score game. Like it feels like games
right.
flip quickly that are
right.
in that maybe 9 to 14 point range. No doubt, it feels like mm-hmm. those games can flip much much quicker. Another game of importance. So the Cowboys are a team the 49ers are going to play way down at the end of the season. The Rams obviously have that win in hand against the Cowboys. Cowboys come back and win that one. Wild finish there. Green Bay is 2-0. They were actually down 14-3 at home to the Lions. The Packers, they were 2-0 against the Lions last year. I saw this stat. They were 2-0 against the Lions and didn't lead at any point in either game until the final gun last year.
Yeah, that was a tough one for the Lions. I think the worst feeling they get now is when they're ahead in a game, because last year they blew so many leads. They were up 14-3 in this one. So the Pack 2-0.
Yeah, the Pack are 2-0. Aaron Jones, 168 yards rushing. He broke off a 75-yard run. Aaron Rodgers had two touchdown passes, so the Aarons are getting it done for the Packers. They're 2-0. The 49ers are going to face them midseason at Levi's Stadium on a Thursday night. That's the quick turnaround game after the 49ers play the back-to-back games at Seattle, at New England, and then at Seattle. So that's a very, very difficult stretch of the 49ers schedule, which is coming up here as they get toward the middle of the season. Looking around at some other games from week two, the 49ers obviously get the win as they are victorious against the Jets.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Ask you. I know big story last week was Bruce Arians, and he was very critical of Tom Brady in a pass he threw against the Saints, and you had Brett Favre coming out and saying, wow, boy, yeah, that's unusual. Keep an eye on that. Rex Ryan came out and said, hey, Bruce Arians, maybe you should criticize yourself. So the fact that Bruce Arians had the audacity to criticize Tommy after week one, that was big news. What's the state of that relationship? Did they get things headed in the right direction in Tampa Bay? I know they were taking on Carolina today.
Yeah, the Buccaneers, a 31-17 win over Carolina. So all is good there.
Whoa, thank goodness.
Yeah, between Tom and Bruce Arians. Tom Brady, a touchdown, an interception, 23-35 for 217. Leonard Fournette, 12 carries Ooh. For 103 yards and two touchdowns in that one for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Chicago beat the Giants, the 49ers' next opponent, 17-13. Indy beat Minnesota, so Minnesota's 0-2. I mean, that's a team that I think many would have projected to be a playoff team, Whitey, in the NFC. They are 0-2, and it's a bad-looking 0-2.
Yes.
It's 0-2 with an awful performance against the Packers, and the Colts were all scattered, and it was the classic kind of Phillip Rivers loses game last week as they lost to Jacksonville. But, you look at the Vikings right now, they are 0-2 and a bad 0-2, and I thought they were going to struggle. To me, if there was a playoff team from last year in the NFC that I would have picked to miss the playoffs, more likely than any of the six teams that made it, the Vikings would have been my pick, and they are now 0-2 on the season. Buffalo won a game at Miami that was delayed by thunderstorms, lightning. But Buffalo improved to win that game. They're 2-0. Pittsburgh beat Denver. So Denver loses again close. The Steelers win 26-21. Tennessee beat Jacksonville 33-30. A couple of the late games, Baltimore, Oliver, Houston, 33-16, and a good one that went to overtime, Kansas City, beat the Chargers. Mm-hmm. The Chargers have been played a couple of close games in the early going, so they're 1-1. But Patrick Mahomes now and the Chiefs are 2-0.
You mentioned the Giants falling to the Bears, and I know we've touched on this today several times, but as we went over to here, we did not get into Saquon Barkley, which obviously is pertinent because next week the 49ers taking on the Giants, and Saquon Barkley only 4 carries today before injury. It looks like he's done for the year, 4 carries for 28 yards. So next week the 49ers with another winless team they're taking on, a New York Giants team that lost to the Steelers and then lost a close one today to the Bears. So despite the injuries, it appears the 49ers have some opportunities here to stay in this thing, taking on the winless, as we speak anyway, the winless Giants, the winless Eagles, and then they got the winless Dolphins. Although that was a pretty close game, wasn't it, JD? You mentioned that the Dolphins lost to Buffalo, but that was a close game.
Yeah, the Dolphins lost to Buffalo. That was a close game. Going back to the Giants game, the Giants were driving to beat the Bears. They were down 4 late. And driving, they made it into the red zone before the Bears ultimately stopped them and won, held on to win it 17-13. So just kind of looking at the standings, never too early, Whitey, to look at the standings across the National Football League. The 49ers find themselves in the NFC West. They trail the Rams and the Cardinals now, both those teams 2-0. Of course, the Cardinals have the head-to-head win in hand over San Francisco. We'll see what happens with Seattle and New England. In the NFC North, the Packers are at least who I thought they were at 2-0, and they've got two divisional wins against Minnesota and Detroit in the early going. The Bears, if you thought the Vikings were good and the Bears were bad, flip-flop those two through the first 2 weeks of the season. The Bears have found a way to survive late twice in the first 2 weeks of the season. The Bears were down big to the Lions. They came back and won. They were leading most of the game against the Giants, hung on for a win. So the Bears find themselves 2-0. And then Dallas, they come back and win. Them and Washington are 1-1. The Eagles are 0-2. So I think if you just look at the standings right now, Whitey, you got Green Bay, Chicago, Arizona and the Rams. You got four teams that are 2-0, and that's it. I think that's also, and Seattle could join them, but that's it right now as far as
in the NFC.
NFC goes, and of course the Saints are going to take on the Raiders tomorrow.
Yeah, on the text line here. Thank you, JD. 888-957-9570. I just love on a Sunday just going over the scores. Thank you very much for that. From the 510. Pete asks, hello, gents. Any chance the NFL will inspect that field turf before the game versus the Giants? You would think so. You would think they would have to after the Steelers lost a tackle last week, tore up his knee on that very same field. And by the way, Barkley, yeah, he's on the Giants, but that was a road game. That was in Chicago. But you had a Steelers player tear up his knee, and then you have, if you have the Bosa injury is as bad as we all think it is, they're going to have to do something. It certainly seems to me, JD, I know we've talked about this, I apologize for being redundant, but it certainly seems to me like it's something they can't ignore.
No, I think there is going to have to be a formal inspection done by league officials. I think I would be stunned, Whitey, if that doesn't happen at some point during the week. I think it's going to be a major. Look, I'm not saying they're going to move the game. In fact, right now, today, I would say I would be more inclined to say they probably won't do that. But I do think this is a storyline that will at least play out over the course of the next 48 to 72 hours, to where the league will be in contact with the 49ers, with the Jets, I think with the Giants, and even the Steelers, who played in that stadium last week. As well. So I think it is something that will absolutely 100% be examined in the next couple of days, and then an ultimate determination will be made.
Couple of interesting thoughts here from the 510. The Jets are in fire the coach mode. They lack effort. They won't win a game until Gase is gone. They did look that way, didn't they, 510? Also,
yes, they did.
All the All the Falcons had to do was grab the weird onside kick. They were huddled around it like cavemen discovering fire.
It was like they couldn't. They thought they couldn't touch it, Whitey. I cannot. I mean, I was blown away. It was like they thought they could touch it anytime.
Yeah,
I mean, what,
that's incredible.
That is a what are you doing moment at this level, Whitey.
Remember, and this was years ago, but remember Donovan McNabb didn't know the overtime rules? I think they were playing the Bengals.
Yes.
And it was like, oh, I can't believe he didn't know the rule. Well, that's one thing. But for professional football players to not know the onside kick rule, I'm absolutely flabbergasted by that. And it's not necessarily, you know, we want to blame, oh, the coaches, they should tell them that. If you're a football player, you have to know the basic rules. That is stunning. Absolutely stunning to me. By the way, you know that the Butcher Boy, Joe Shasky, probably stunned by the way it went down today. He's going to join us bottom of the hour here. It's double overtime. Whitey and JD on 95.7 The Game. And JD, I think we'll talk more about this with Butcher Boy. But with these injuries mounting for the 49ers, what do you think they can be looking at? What should fans expect in terms of some of the possible solutions to some of these issues? Let's start with Mostert, all right? What do the 49ers do if they're going to be without Mostert for the foreseeable?
Well, it's going to be Jerick McKinnon, and it's going to be Tevin Coleman, and it's going to be Jeff Wilson Jr., and if the 49ers do feel they have to make some kind of a roster move, Jamichael Hasty would be the most likely candidate to come up from the practice squad. He is the only running back on the practice squad. So, he was somebody that was highly thought of in training camp, and he did wind up getting waived and then signed back to the practice squad during the cutdown. But there was some speculation by many in the media that he might make the team outright. That wound up not happening. Mm-hmm. And, of course, anytime there's a Shanahan offense, you got to think that they can find a way to make the most out of the running back position. So I actually think as much as Mostert was a factor, and my goodness, he was a factor in the game today.
Yeah.
He took the first play of the game 80 yards to the house after taking the pass 76 yards to the house last week against the Arizona Cardinals. I think the 49ers are covered in the running game better than they are at any other of the places that they have injuries right now.
You know who would have loved Mostert was Al Davis. Al Davis just loved players who were fast. How about defensive line now? No Bosa, no Solomon Thomas. I know we touched on this earlier. I think we both agree Ziggy Ansah is probably going to get a call. And as we discussed with Eric Crocker, Nick Bosa and what he has been able to provide is so vital to this team that they may very well have to explore either signing a free agent, Eric Crocker mentioned, I think, Clay Matthews, or looking at what's available on the trade market.
Yeah, I think, you know, initially, and Eric Crocker mentioned this, they left Armstead on the outside. Usually they slide him inside in, you know, pass rushing downs. So Bosa and D Ford, under perfect circumstances, could rush, but they'll bring in another rusher. Maybe leave him on the outside. Deion Jordan is somebody that's on the practice squad. Darian Daniels is somebody, a defensive tackle, that could be activated from the practice squad as well to help not only with the loss of Bosa, but also the loss of Solomon Thomas. You're probably going to see both of those guys come up. I do think with Bosa, you know, they're going to have to look at Ziggy Ansah for sure. I mean, I would be surprised if he's not a member of the 49ers by Wednesday morning when they're on the practice field in West Virginia. As far as the defensive tackles inside, there's more depth there with Javon mm-hmm. Kinlaw, with Kentavious Street, with even Kevin Givens before you get to a guy like, before you get, you know, even further down the line to even a guy like Darian Daniels. So I think there is some depth there. I do think, you know, Ronald Blair III is somebody that's eligible to get activated after the first six games. And he can help with the pass rush. He had a knee injury last year. Ronald Blair Jr. is somebody that I think the 49ers can look at as, hey, that's depth coming down the line. But again, he is coming off his own ACL injury, but could be a welcome breath of fresh air for the 49ers midseason if they can figure out a way how to add some of and offset some of the loss of not having Bosa here the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Hey, you want to win a $250 gift card to Snake River Farms? Tweet us at 957TheGame using the hashtag ElevateYourTailgate with a photo of your home tailgate to be entered to win a $250 gift card from Snake River Farms. We're looking for the best tailgate picks as we head into, well, now we're, I guess we're heading into week three of the NFL season. Entrants must include the hashtag ElevateYourTailgate and mention at 957TheGame in their tweet for the entry to be counted. Snake River Farms, the pioneer of American Wagyu beef. And speaking of beef, the butcher boy, Joe Shasky, joins us next on Double Overtime. Waddy and JD on 95.7 The Game.
Garoppolo trying to do better here, but he slips and down he goes as the pocket was collapsing. And now you just hope Garoppolo's okay. Remember, he had the left knee injury, still wearing that brace.
Fortunately, able to jog off. Looks like he's limping just a little bit.
Now back to Double Overtime on 95.7 The Game.
Whitey and JD on Double Overtime, and as the calamity unfolded today, I found myself wondering, how's Butcher Boy dealing with all this? Of course, I follow him on Twitter, and you hear him pre- and post-game here on 95.7 The Game, but we wanted to invite him on just to A, make sure he's doing okay, and B, also see what he thinks as far as how the 49ers find their way out of this. So nice enough to join us, Joe Shasky, the Butcher Boy. Joe, thanks for your time. We know you've been very busy today. Have you ever seen anything quite like this game today? A huge win, and yet with all the injuries, it's hardly the get-right, feel-good game the Niners were hoping for.
It's one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen for a variety of reasons. Obviously, the field surface, the playing surface itself has been widely scrutinized, speculated about, and talked about, whether it's the players, the coach himself, whether it's the fan base, whether it's the commentators who were actually broadcasting the game. Like, something was going on today. And look, football is a violent sport. Like, let's not pretend that every single week there's no injuries. I mean, every single play could be your last in the NFL. But just seeing how these guys were dropping like flies left and right, I've never seen anything like that. And it overshadowed, unfortunately, so many positives from the 49ers. And the sad part about this is that this is going to linger over them the rest of the year. It doesn't mean the year is over, but losing Nick Bosa, losing Jimmy Garoppolo, losing all the guys that they lost today, it's hard to walk away from this game feeling great, even though there were some amazing things that happened during the game itself. Eric Armstead balling out, for example. Jimmy Garoppolo having an unbelievable second quarter. Like, there were some great things that happened, but the shadow and the cloud, whatever you want to call it, of Nick Bosa being lost for the year, it's devastating.
Yeah, Butch, I mean, it really is, but I think there is a path toward this team being able to hang in if you just look at the upcoming schedule. And that's even if you're not going to have Jimmy Garoppolo or Raheem Mostert or obviously Bosa and to a lesser extent Solomon Thomas. I think there's a lot of interior depth that the 49ers have, not as much pass rush depth. Interior, I think they'll be fine, though. But the schedule is maybe what is the saving grace for this team, in that the Giants don't have a win, the Eagles don't have a win, the Dolphins don't have a win. We weren't in the business of just, you know, counting out victories anyway. We especially can't do that now, but I think the 49ers still are, they're in as good a position as they can be in for being in as bad a position as they're in as well, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I mean, look, let's take some of the positives from today. Everyone's going to highlight the negatives. Totally fair. But let's look at the positives. Fred Warner is a superstar. I mean, this is an organization that had the two best linebackers in the game. I would argue one of the best linebackers of the last 25 years in Patrick Willis. And somehow, Fred Warner is playing at a level that is reminiscent of Patrick Willis, just in a different way. I mean, this guy is the prototype 2020 linebacker. stuffing the run, blitzing up the middle multiple times, and then his defense in pass coverage is as good as you can be as a middle linebacker in today's day and age. Obviously, Eric Armstead got broke off so much money this year. I thought he was phenomenal today. I mean, phenomenal. We ripped this guy when he doesn't play well last week and at times the last couple of years. Well, they broke him off the amount of money for days like today. He played so well today, and I was very encouraged. They lose Bosa. They lose Solomon Thomas on like back-to-back plays. And to end that drive, Eric Armstead gets an unreal sack that they had to have at that time in the play, in the game. And then Jimmy Ward, who they paid a lot of money, had an unbelievable adjustment mid-second quarter to just making open field tackles on the quick out passes. So there was a lot of positives today, even though it was a horrific day injury-wise. I don't think Nick Mullins is a superstar quarterback, but I don't think you need to be a superstar quarterback with Kyle Shanahan, with this team, looking at the schedule and who they're playing. I'm very worried about the Raheem Mostert injury. That being said, I think Jamichael Hasty can be elevated from the practice squad and give them elements of a home run hitter, because if you've looked at his college tape, that's who this guy is. Brandon Ayuk, first opportunity today, saw some really encouraging things. And then two guys who I had zero expectations for coming into this year, in Jordan Reed and obviously Jerick McKinnon. Those guys had really nice days today, and there seems to be something for a blanket, a security blanket for Jimmy Garoppolo with Jordan Reed. I think there's some positives that they can roll into the next couple of weeks. They don't have to be dominant. They just have to beat the New York Giants and the Philadelphia Eagles, and just 1 week at a time. Just 1 week at a time. So, yes, I'm with you, JD. The sky is not wholly falling. It's bad. It's orange like it was a couple of weeks ago. But the next day, maybe the sun comes out, you know?
Well,
So you're doing okay. Yeah, you're doing okay. Because we worry about you personally. You're doing all right with this. So far, so good. Butch?
I'm going to be honest with you. Nick Bosa is one of my favorite football players since Patrick Willis. Like that's, I just love watching him play football. And he's awesome. Like, he's absolutely awesome. And to see him go down that way, it just... Yeah. I mean, if for no other lack of a better term, it was gut-wrenching. I was literally sick to my stomach watching him hop onto a cart, because I saw with Navarro Bowman, you can hurt your leg and never be the same. I mean, that's the way football kind of is, you know? And I don't know. I don't want to jump the gun. Who knows how severe the injury is? But it's hard to come back from a torn ACL. We always point to Adrian Peterson and we're like, oh, anybody can come back. Not really. You know, I mean, not really. Jerick McKinnon missed almost two full seasons. And as good as he's looked the last two games, he's not the exact same player that he was. So I don't know what it means for Nick Bosa. I'm getting way ahead of myself. But just seeing him on a cart, it was devastating. Whitey, he's one of my favorite players.
Yeah, well, I know. You mentioned Garoppolo and how much better he looked, and the offense had such a better rhythm. Of course, they're playing the Jets, but how about having Garland back at center? How comforting was it to see the offensive line really assert itself again?
You know, I thought the offensive line looked really good today. Who knows? The Jets, it's such a small sample size. I have no idea if their D-line is any good or not. But I liked what I saw from them today. I thought that Jimmy Garoppolo, there's something about Jimmy Garoppolo. I thought, in a weird way, not having Kittle on the field forced him to not have to look his way and not have to overthink every single play. And in a weird way, it like freed him up emotionally. I mean, when have we seen Jimmy Garoppolo hit his back foot and just look for the open man and take what the defense is giving him? I can't remember the last time where he played so freely. And now, I don't want to blame it on George Kittle, but I just feel like he understood, given the personnel we have out there, I just got to just throw the ball around and not worry about who I'm throwing to and overthinking it. Do I trust this guy? And I thought we saw the best of Jimmy Garoppolo today. Like, I was so encouraged, not only with his toughness, his decision-making. He was making just the basic smart reads, keeping the play in front of him. How about the first play of the game? Not the Mostert touchdown. The first play is a screenplay that gets blown up, and Jimmy improvs and kind of throws a little sidearm shortstop double play action, and Jordan Reed makes a one-handed play. I'm going, this is the Jimmy Garoppolo I fell in love with. the improvising guy who doesn't overthink the play and just goes out there and plays football. Like, that was so refreshing to see. And then he obviously gets hurt, and but it doesn't take away from, I felt as good as you could possibly feel about Jimmy Garoppolo coming out of halftime. Like, I really did. Like, whether he was going to miss the next couple games or not, I'm saying, you know what? Jimmy looked really good.
Yeah, he did, and I think that bodes well for whenever he returns. I doubt it's going to be against the Giants. It may not even be against the Giants, the Eagles, or the Dolphins. It remains to be seen, but he will be able to come back at some point, which obviously puts the 49ers in a much better position than they were, you know, 2 years ago when we're talking about his injury. I mean, that injury that day, that was it. The season ended on that day, and everybody knew it. So I think, you know, that's obviously not the case here. I want to get one more take from you on Garoppolo, because I thought, in addition to what you said, that they gave the ball to their best players today. Like, and Kendrick Bourne is their best wide receiver right now. Like, and they went and they threw it to Kendrick Bourne. Jordan Reed was their best tight end right now, as far as who was playing. They threw him the ball. Raheem Mostert's their best running back right now. There's an element of Kyle Shanahan to me where he almost leaves stuff in the bag, but then when he knows he's got to just let it go because you need to win, he'll do it. And I thought today the focus was more on playing the hits, getting the ball to your best players, and letting them decide the game on offense.
I completely agree. I mean, is there any question? I know he's hurt now. Is there any question Raheem Mostert's one of the best home run hitters in the NFL? Like, we talk about Christian McCaffrey and how deadly he can be, and he is. He's unreal. There's no question about it. Raheem Mostert is as explosive as someone like McCaffrey. Now, he may not be as dynamic in the pass game, but as far as, like, on any given play, he could just outrun everyone on the defense. That's literally what he can do. And I know one play got called back because of a McGlinchey hold, but, I mean, Raheem Mostert is a superstar when he's on the field. He is as good of an athlete as anyone else in the league right now, and it's just so obvious. And then Jordan Reed, hey, we're gonna kind of take our time with Jordan Reed. We're not gonna push him. We're gonna have him out there. Well, I thought last week they did a disservice by not having Jordan Reed on the field. You don't have any playmakers. Use this guy. Like, every game matters. Today they fed him the ball, and he made some grown man catches, specifically in the red zone, and you could tell Jimmy felt comfortable throwing to him. You also talked about Kendrick Bourne. Kendrick Bourne, he's not a one. He'll never be even probably a great number two. He's a damn good three. Like, I could go to war with Kendrick Bourne. He makes contested catches. I love his energy. There's something about his moxie out on the field. And this is a team that just needs guys who could go out there and make plays for them. And he was making plays for them. I'm really excited for just, again, the incremental gains on offense that I saw today. But I go back to the defense, JD. Like, as excited as I am on offense, I think that high-priced guys, Arik Armstead, obviously Jimmy Ward, Quan played a lot better, but Fred Warner, who will be a high-priced guy, those were the guys today that set the tone and gave the offense enough life to feel themselves. And I thought Kyle Shanahan did a really good job blending in the complimentary football that he needed to, play action when they needed to, taking strikes down the field when they needed to. Much better game plan all in all, in my opinion, for the entire staff, whether it's Robert Saleh's defense, Kyle Shanahan. And I just thought that their high-priced players played better today.
Yeah, no Sherman today, obviously, given that, and no Bosa, no Thomas for much of the game. The defense was incredible. Joe Shasky with us here on Double Overtime. Butch, I know you and I, we have fun sometimes with comps, and I hadn't thought of this one. Maybe you have, but we had Arik Crocker on today, and you were just talking about Mostert, and Arik Crocker said that Mostert reminds him of Chris Johnson. What do you think of that comp?
Okay. You know, Mostert, I think Mostert's way more tough than Chris Johnson ever was. Chris Johnson was kind of soft. Didn't really want to cut the ball back inside. The guy that I keep going back to with Raheem Mostert, and I know people think I'm crazy. I think he's a faster Priest Holmes. I think this is a guy who came out of nowhere. You look at him, he's got chiseled arms. He's much faster than you give him credit for. Priest Holmes was not the most dynamic in the passing game, but once he caught the ball and he was out in the flat, he always seemed to make guys miss. And then the other thing that I think that Raheem Mostert has that not many guys, there's a special quality about people who can sniff the end zone from 40 yards away. Like, there's just some guys get tackled at the five. Some guys just always end up in the end zone. Raheem Mostert's one of those guys. Somehow, some way, he ends up in the end zone. He'll stiff arm a guy. He doesn't step out of bounds. And, like, you think the safety has taken a proper angle, and he just blows right by the guy. And then next thing you know, he's surfing in the end zone. I just love Raheem Mostert. Like, I'm a legitimate fan of his story. I'm a fan of the player. And I think that if he were 23 years old and a second or third round pick, we'd be talking about him proportionate to actually what he is right now, which is one of the best playmakers in the NFC and in all the NFL. That's who he is. Like, I don't care how old he is. I don't care that he was undrafted and was a special teams gunner. Look at what he's done when the ball's in his hand. He's elite.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Eric Crocker wasn't the only one. Whitey, I didn't mention this earlier, but I meant to. Trent Williams actually made that same comparison.
Really?
In the post-game press conference. Yeah. That wasn't actually, believe it or not, the first time I had heard that today, which I thought was kind of interesting. Let's get to the elephant in the room, though, Butch, and that's Bosa specifically in terms of not the injury, and obviously he's an unbelievable specimen. And a joy to watch, really, play the position. But how do the 49ers, in your mind, how are they gonna try to overcome it? I mean, this is, you can do things with running backs. I think you could play two or three games without Garoppolo, even the next two or three, maybe not two or three later on in the year, but the next two or three you can get away with it. But how do you overcome not having Bosa? Because the whole defense is predicated on pass rush and defensive line dominance.
Yeah, I think this is the million-dollar question right now. I don't think you ever truly replace someone as great as Nick Bosa, because he commands so much attention, so much game planning. Obviously, they're going to chip him. I mean, he changes everything an offense wants to do to slow him down. It's going to be Robert Saleh with the scheme. Like, he's going to have to get creative like he did today, blitzing Fred Warner. It's going to have to be all hands on deck. I don't think any one player is going to, take his productivity. But Hyder Jr., the guy makes plays. I mean, he's a solid contributor. I think Javon Kinlaw is going to have to play more reps at this point by necessity. And then the other part of this is you're going to have to go outside the organization and look for guys who are just straight-up pass rush specialists. Is it Cameron Wake? Is it Deion Jordan, who's on the practice squad? Ziggy Ansah? Yes, whoever. Like, at this point, you got to kind of just roll the dice, but don't sacrifice things for the future. Meaning, I don't want to see them trade away draft status or compensation to bring someone in, because at this point, I just think you have to just sign guys, bring them in and out of the roster or off the practice squad, roll the dice, see if it works, and just try to squeeze the lemon for everything you have. This is a team that already traded a third round pick. This season already kind of feels, not that it's over per se, but it's going to be a scratch, claw, fight your way to a 9-7 finish and pray that that's enough to get into the wild card. Like, that's what it's feeling like. So I don't want to surrender a second or, heaven forbid, a first round draft pick if that means this team's still not going to ultimately get to the destination that we want it to. They need to have some future picks. So I think it's a collection of ways that they're going to have to offset the production from him. And then again, I look at D Ford and I'm saying, D, look, I traded a second round pick for you. I gave you a boatload of money. You going to play this year or what? Like, you played 33% of the snaps last year when you were healthy. You missed some games. I need you to just step up. Are you on this team? Where you at? And then I look at Eric Armstead and I say, Eric, look, I mean, I haven't asked you at all to do this your entire career. You need to be the guy. Like, you need to be the guy on this defensive line. You need to attack double teams. You need to have leadership. You can't give up on plays. You need to set the tone, and you need to play lights out. And it's a tall ask. That's a real tall ask. But if I look at the guys who are capable of maybe doing it, I think he's at the top of the line. So, JD, it's impossible to replace Nick Bosa. He's ridiculous.
Butch, you're the best. You're impossible to replace. We appreciate your time very, very much, especially a very busy day for you. Thanks, brother. We'll talk to you again soon.
Love you guys.
Enjoy your evening, sir. All right.
Have a good one, guys.
Yeah, you too. Joe Shasky, the butcher from The Butcher Shop. And, of course, he's on with Bonte before games, after games here on 95.7 The Game. By the way, JD, as you well know, join Jerry Rice tomorrow morning, 8:45 on the morning show. See what Jerry has to say about what happened today and where the 49ers go from here. And 95.7 The Game reacting all day tomorrow right here on the Bay Area's football station, 95.7 The Game. What do you think of that notion that, hey, you can't sacrifice any future assets just to keep that Super Bowl window open the rest of this year, John Dickinson?
I think you got to see where you're at the deadline. And look, the 49ers are on record by saying, you know, they're on record saying they don't want to do it in terms of spending draft capital because of what they had to spend to get Emmanuel Sanders a year ago. And they gave up a little bit, obviously, to get Trent Williams. So I think, you know, when that went down to replace Joe Staley, you know, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan came out on draft night, really, right at the end of the draft and said, hey, that's not something they're comfortable doing a lot because the picks are, you know, down the line are how you replenish the roster and keep an extended run going. So I think you got to be careful with it. But if you hold this thing down and you get to the middle of the year and you feel like you could be a championship contending team again if you can add one pass rusher.
Yes. Yes.
I think you really got to strongly consider it because opportunities to win the Super Bowl don't come every year. And I think already we're seeing how difficult the transition is just based on how different this year has started compared to last year.
Totally agree with you. There's also this, and Butch touched on it, D. Ford is so important, right, in terms of trying to figure out where you go from here without Bosa. Because D. Ford, and if the guy's hurt, he's hurt. He can't play. If he's got something wrong in his neck, he can't play. It's not a matter of his will necessarily. He can't play. But now you don't have that luxury of, okay, you're going to be in a couple weeks. All right. They need to know now. What are we doing with D. Ford? Because if you don't have that pass rush that the 49ers have had that the defense is really built on, I think the pass rush defense is built on the pass rush the same way the offense is basically built on rushing the ball. And if you don't have the pass rush, and then you're going to have to blitz more, I mean, I could see the whole thing coming apart. I'm not saying they're going to be a terrible team, but if they got to start blitzing more because they don't have the same pass rush, that's not going to be that 49er defense that really was a foundational piece to getting them into the Super Bowl last year. So I agree with you, depending on where D. Ford is and what's available, I think if it comes to trading a future asset to keep the Super Bowl window open this year, I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I'm less. I don't think it's a no-brainer because you have to look at what's out there and what you would give up. But I
agree.
But I would strongly lean toward looking to make it happen.
John Dickinson, it's been great hanging out with you today. Double overtime. I think we should try it again sometime. What do you think? You don't have to answer.
How about next week?
Next week. All right. Yeah, the 49ers. After the 49ers demolish the Giants next week, let's do it.
Let's do it. Looking forward to it, my man.
Thank you, JD. Appreciate it. Have a great evening. And thank you very much for listening to Double Overtime on 95.7 The Game. Fox Sports Radio is coming up right here on your football station, 95.7 The Game.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.